respect everybody that you run into. How in the world do you think anybody's supposed to respect you? It's a brand new day. Respect yourself.
Well, this is Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us, and I'm Sheldon Brown. And on Facebook during the week, there was a nice little saying with a little graphic with some mountains there, and it said, recovery feels like climbing a mountain. It's slow, and sometimes you slide down, but eventually you'll get to the top. So there's a little positive thought of getting to the top of the mountain, which I think is a nice metaphor for recovery. So you were listening to our theme music from Joe Cocker called Respect Yourself, with some great messages about respecting yourself and others. As I said, I'm host Sheldon Brown with technician Declan Curran, and Mental Health Radio is brought to you and funded by Framework Trust. Today we hear about the birth of community mental health services from a pioneering Framework board member whose work helped to formulate the shape of community mental health for years to come. And we're going back into the early 1980s here, when community mental health was just a germ of an idea, really. Our guest, Murray Henschel, was part of a small government-backed group to initiate a vision for community mental health and sell it to stakeholders like funders, the government, and people likely to use the new model. So today we hear Murray's experiences dating back to 1981. That date, in fact, is at least 3 years before Framework became a reality. Well, Murray, welcome to Take It From Us. Last time, I think you were helping us to acknowledge Framework's 25th birthday and the 25th year of its services to mental health and intellectual disability. Yeah, so welcome again to Take It From Us. That must have been, what's my maths like, 9 years ago. 9 years ago?
It could, yes. It might have been more than that, Sheldon.
Do you think so?
Yeah, 10 or 11 maybe, I'm not sure.
We're into, what, the 34th year of Framework,
yes,
aren't we?
Yes, yeah. That's, well, yes, from 83, when the first building was obtained in Kingsland, and that's when it was opened. And but before that, as you mentioned, the formative stages were from 81.
Right. So that was when you were called in to get involved in. I guess you didn't have much of an idea of what you were getting involved in.
I didn't. I had no experience in the mental health field. But I was a partner in one of the large CA firms, and the sister of my first wife was a friend of a lady called Sue McKenna, and Sue McKenna was instrumental in bringing about the birth of Framework.
So Sue McKenna, I think her name still crops up, doesn't it? Are you aware of whether she's still working in health?
No, I don't think so. She is married to a winemaker and lives in the Wairarapa.
Oh, well. She married well and got well away from mental health.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So, you know, so you got called in through those connections. Did you have any, what sort of an idea of the challenge that you were facing and this group was facing? Did you have much of an idea?
No, it was just completely foreign to me in many ways. As I say, I was a chartered accountant going about my business. I was approached by Sue in the Sue McKenna, and asked if I would become a trustee of this newly formed charitable trust. And once she had explained what was envisaged going forward, I was willing to participate. And interestingly, I was thrown in with a group of wonderful people who were the founding trustees of Framework as we know it today.
So it was your expertise with figures in business, accounting and that sort of thing. They felt that that was clearly a necessary part of putting together a charitable community mental health organisation.
Yeah, yes, I think that's right. Obviously, at the governance level, you're looking for a balance of talents. Accounting and legal stand out, but clearly there was a need for a significant mental health component amongst those initial trustees. And the three names that come to mind are Fraser McDonald, who was very eminent and at the top of the tree, in effect, in the mental health field back in the 80s.
Well, he was the head of Carrington Hospital, wasn't he?
Right, he was, yes, indeed. And he was a founding trustee. There were two other mental health professionals, Floris de Groot, who has lent his name to some scholarships that Framework continues to grant to aspiring mental health professionals. And the other person was Jenny Payne, who was strongly on the ground working with Sue McKenna and in the early days putting that base group of trustees together.
Right, so when did Bob Harvey, the ex-mayor of Waitakere City and a pretty high-powered man in terms of advertising and has a great profile, when did he get involved?
He was in from the beginning.
Right.
He was one of those 8 or 10 of us who were charged with, you know, getting this organisation off the ground.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, I met Bob when I was working for New Zealand Steel as a public relations officer, and he was running the big advertising agency in Parnell, and we worked together coinciding with a new chief executive at New Zealand Steel, and they wanted to up the profile. So, yeah, I've had a bit of exposure to Bob. But he's also now the patron of Framework
He's
come back into the sort of mental health field.
Yes. Yes, well, perhaps he never left it.
right.
You know, Bob is an incredibly likable person. He has a terrific profile in the community. And, yes, he probably has allowed his name to go forward on many aspects of our work over the years.
Mm. Well, he was also very candid on the AM show after the death of Greg Boyd, the broadcaster.
Yes.
And Bob admitted that he didn't realise until the age of 44 or 45 that he was adopted.
Right.
And he said that had quite an emotionally crushing effect on him in his mid-40s. So, you know, he talks from experience of emotional hurt.
Right.
Yeah. So you've detailed those people that were involved. I mean, what happened next?
Well, we had nowhere to operate from, and the Auckland Health Board at that time provided us with a room that we could meet in, and that was about it. the clearly we had to obtain premises, and we could not find suitable premises for quite some while, and that's part of the gap between 81 and the 83 when we did come up with some premises. So, yeah, for quite a while we were orphans, and another aspect, obviously, of the establishment of a working organisation was the recruitment of a CEO. Right. And through that period, and with the appropriate funding, we duly appointed a CEO, and I guess that was the starting point. Even then, we still didn't have premises to operate from.
Can you just clarify, Murray, what the brief was? I mean, was it just as wide as we've said in the introduction, that this was to set up a community mental health organisation, a charitable organisation?
Yes, well, the framework came into being following a similar model of care in the UK, and it was the move from institutional care for those who suffer from mental ill health to community-based provision of health services. And so that was our entire purpose, to take the care of for those with mental illness from an institution like Carrington and Kingsseat to out to the community. And that was following a model that had been established in the UK.
What do you think had happened in mental health care to stimulate this move?
Well, clearly the existing focus on institutional care was not giving us the answer. There was no focus on self-improvement or real understanding of the causes and background to mental health back in those times. And therefore, another approach was needed.
I mean, do you recall quite a build-up of criticism of the old... We called them old bins, didn't we? The old psychiatric bins.
Yes.
Where people were just sort of thrown in and forgotten. I mean, that might be a bit extreme, but...
Well, I think, in fairness, Sheldon, I hadn't been involved in mental health until this participation in Framework's origins. So I wasn't familiar with the standard of care and service that was being provided, but it certainly became clear afterwards that what we were creating was offering a much better service to those who suffer from mental ill health than previously.
So you were able to get up to speed by having people like Sue McKenna and Fraser McDonald
yes.
on your founding committee.
That's it.
Right.
Absolutely. And clearly Fraser McDonald, who was the head of Carrington at that time, could himself see that there was a need to take the provision of care to the community.
So he was quite unequivocal about that. He felt that this
absolutely
was...
he was 100% behind it. And
right.
There's a part of me that says he was the cornerstone that, in a operational sense, he pointed the finger to Sue McKenna, who was a health board member, and said, "Let's build this organisation, a charitable trust with a governance group of trustees, and the subsequent provision of mental health services."
Right. So, what was your understanding about other groups that might have been setting up in other independent or separate community mental health?
I guess at that time I didn't have too much knowledge of like organisations. We were focused on establishing a financial base for ourselves, identifying programs of care and service that were needed in the community. And it was a progressive approach where new organizations, other charitable trusts, and other organizations throughout New Zealand were established on the same model as Framework.
But Framework must have been a front runner. Because
it was the pioneer. Recollection has it that it was a pioneer in the Auckland marketplace.
Right, and we had Rob Warner, the CEO of Walsh Trust, in last week, and he played the compliment to Framework that, you know, it was looked up to in the way that it had been established and was operating. Walsh must have come in about 4 years or 5 years later.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that speaks for itself, and those are kind words of his.
Yes. Yeah. Well, let's take a music break. We're talking to Murray Henschel today about the birth and pioneering years of community mental health, particularly Framework Trust. What have you got for us, Declan?
Well, this particular song is about feeling joyous, and it's written after the guy bought a house near a barley field. And it's written by Sting, or sung by Sting anyway. It's called Fields of Gold. Sting's real name is actually Gordon Sumner. You're listening to Take It From Us Mental Health Radio, broadcasting to you right here on Planet FM 104.6 every Tuesday from 12:30 to 1:30. Here's Fields of Gold with Sting.
The sun in his jealous sky, when we walked in fields of gold. With Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And I'm host Sheldon Brown with Declan Curran, and we are talking today to Murray Henschel, who was a pioneering member of a visionary group to set up a charitable community mental health service, which later became known as Framework. One of the major developments that you've hinted at, Murray, is that you had to appoint a CEO. So you had to go from the top down. Was that the plan?
Absolutely. We went to the marketplace in a recruitment exercise. It was an interesting selection process, given that there were no employees at that time. And I can remember our first appointment was of a gentleman called John Tomsett, and it was he who then began the process of recruiting to the needs of the organisation, as we at the governance level had described to him. And that's how the initial person power of the organisation came about. It grew from one single person, John Tomsett, progressively to today's person power of Framework.
Yeah, so do you recall what the brief was to the CEO? I mean, I guess he had to mirror the visionary work that you and your colleagues were doing as part of this small group.
Well, it was to identify the needs in the marketplace and to identify community-based solutions to those needs. And it was as simple as that identifying need and then meeting the need.
Well, I suppose housing was a major priority, wasn't it? I mean, if you were going to release all these people from the psychiatric bins, they had to live somewhere. And, of course, housing really, or premises, was a challenge for you as part of the visionary group.
Yes, it was. And we were fortunate in having one of the trustee group, a businessman, Tony Timpson by name,
who Cavalier Carpets.
Yes, he was a major shareholder and CEO of Cavalier Carpets. And his brief to us was, find yourself a building and I will pay for it.
Wow.
And that began the identification and growth of Framework in the Kingsland area, and Kingsland Terrace in particular, that led to one building becoming two, becoming three, and so on.
Mm. I understand that Tony Timpson had a close association with mental health through his family.
Yes, I understand that to be the case. And right. he was a very sympathetic and conscientious participant in our governance debates.
Did he come on to the Board of Trustees?
He was one of the original trustees.
Oh, I see.
Yes, yes. Right. So he was aware of our difficulties around finding suitable accommodation.
Yeah. Did Kingsland sort of show up as a logical place, or was it sort of putting the dart in the dartboard?
There was an element of that. I think obviously it was our choice, and John Tomsett had done some homework. He had been on board for some time at that, as we made as that offer was made to us, And he determined that it was on sufficiently on the periphery of the downtown area of Auckland, and that it was an appropriate place. And that proved to be the case.
And John Tom said, do you recall what sort of skills and expertise he brought to it?
I think it was, I don't think he had a mental health background. I think he was an experienced manager of a commercial organization, and it was felt that he had enough personal sympathy and identification with our purpose. And yes, I think John stayed with us for 3 or 4 years, and they were clearly pioneering and formative years.
Mm. But you had to somehow find some funds to pay his wages.
Yes, Sheldon, that was in those days, the kitty and the money in the bank was a constant problem for us. And I remember well going with John to the CEO of the then Auckland Health Board, having to go cap in hand and asking for monies that would enable us to pay the then wages that the organisation had. It was an embarrassing thing, but we had been given our beginnings and our birth by the health board, and we were back there to ask for their assistance in moving forward. And I have to say that was the only time that the financial concerns and base of the organisation were less than required. So it was a once-er.
But isn't that it appears to me to be a bit of a reflection on the lack of sort of maybe commitment or dedication to this process. Was that the feeling of your group?
Well, yes, it was. I mean, yes, there was an element of frustration that we were having to focus on getting by financially when there were larger issues to debate and bring in and services to create. So, yes, there was an element of frustration at that time.
I mean, if you attract a suitable manager as a CEO and then there's some doubt as to whether you can pay him, doesn't reflect well on the commitment, does it?
It does not. And but having said that, I guess they had their reasons for our getting into the situation that we found at that time, and as I say, it didn't happen again.
Right, and you recall it as being a sort of a progressive move from the hospitals to community mental health, because obviously it would have had to have been synchronised in some ways.
Well, that's right. Progressively obtained accommodation in Kingsland, and it was Kingsland Terrace in particular, the folk that were based in the community were coming to Framework to a drop-in centre. This was a term that was used at that time, a drop-in centre, where passive activities like snooker and just
drinking coffee and
drinking coffee,
probably smoking,
and just being there, and clearly that isn't the way Framework operates now. It's markedly different, but back then, it was a place for them to go as opposed to being institutionalised.
When you use the word accommodation, you're not talking about accommodation.
Overnight.
No,
it was just, you know, day activity. The whole move into providing residential care came quite a bit later.
Right. So were these people coming from places like Carrington, do you remember, to the drop-in
yes.
centre? So that was all part of the transition?
Yes, it was. Absolutely.
And the drop-in centre was supervised or...?
Absolutely. It had to be.
Right.
You know, there was people who, some of them had degrees of violence and, there had to be quite close supervision of their activities.
So you had another person who came along saying that they wanted to make a contribution to Framework, and I think they had a family member. So that was somebody that put up the money to buy one of the next houses.
Yes. A wonderful middle-class ageing couple who had an adopted son by name Murray, and it was there that we had provided a drop-in home for him during the day. They didn't live far from Kingsland Terrace, and when they could see the change that was part of Murray's life as a result of this connection with others in his field in a community situation, they, when we indicated that we were trying to buy a building in fact in Otahuhu at the time, they put up their hand and said, we will buy it. No, in fact, I think they owned it.
Right.
And gave us that building.
They gifted it to Framework.
They gifted it to Framework.
Right,
yes.
So that was the one in Station Road where
yes.
a lot of programs were later.
Yes, the ISS is currently operating from there.
Oh, that the Intensive Support Service.
Yes.
Yes. Well, let's take another music break and give Murray a bit of a break as well.
Yes, I'm just about ready to cough again shortly, so I'll get on with it. This one, of course, is a modern track. I like to play one each time we come to air. And this is by a group called Rudimental, and it features Ed Sheeran. The title of the song is simply Lay It All On Me. And I don't need to tell you, you're listening to Take It From Us Mental Health Radio, 104.6 Planet FM, broadcasting every Tuesday from 12:30 to 1:30.
Nothing left to see. If it hurts and you can't take no more, lay it all on me. No, you don't have to keep it under lock and key, 'cause I will never let you down. And if you can't escape all your uncertainty, baby, I can show you how.
Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And I'm Mental Health Radio host Sheldon Brown with Declan Curran, and we're talking today to Murray Henschel about the pioneering days of setting up community mental health services, and particularly framework. What was a significant development that happened, Murray, in terms of securing funding and establishing this pioneering service on a stronger footing?
In the national scene for mental health services, we moved to the RFP and contract for services model.
That's the, what's RFP stand for?
Request for proposal.
For proposal, that's right, yes.
So that organisations that the DHBs felt might be able to provide the services that they had defined in the obviously community-based, they then sent these proposals or the request for proposals out. We completed those proposals and were either successful or not. But that was the new model of service that led to a different approach to mental health and away from the drop-in centres and the more passive activity.
Was there any call on the expertise, though, that you had gathered together in your charitable trust group? Was there any input that you were able to give to?
Oh, there was a lot of debate and discussion with the contract providers about, you know, in those early days, about defining the need, so that there was an ongoing need to define the needs of those who have suffered from mental ill health. And this was a joint exercise with the contractor and the contracting parties.
What were the things that were being talked about, the recognised needs?
Well, in particular for, one would call it passive recruitment, that there were a range of jobs that were seen to be suitable for those who have had periods of illness and but with some oversight and close scrutiny, they would become employed people. And clearly the motivation associated with being an employed person just speaks for itself. And that led to Framework providing a range of identifying jobs that people within Framework, that the clients of Framework, could then apply for.
That was jobs that Framework was offering, or these were jobs
These were jobs in the marketplace.
Right.
The Framework was merely the intermediary, working with our clients, and indicating with some help from Framework and support that our clients could then be engaged and employed.
So this was the birth of WorkFocus, which of course is Framework's employment support service, which is a very successful service. I think they're confronted with a new request for proposal coming up in the near future. So I think everybody's scurrying around putting that together and getting endorsements from clients and other users, probably the employers as well, to support that RFP.
Right. Well, let's hope that comes about, and I'm sure that if the Framework that I know Yes, it will achieve that.
Right. I mean, was Framework successful with some of those early requests for proposals?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And it was the establishment of these sorts of contracts and the implementation of the needs and, dare I say, that the contracting parties also did audits of the services provided so that they were up to a certain standard that was acceptable to the contractor.
I suppose it was a bit of a juggling act in terms of do you get the contract and then employ the staff, or do you employ the staff and get the contract?
Yeah. Well, that's right. There is a bit of chicken and egg about it, but, you know, there was a base group of people that were clients of Framework, and our purpose was to find employment for them.
Right. But in terms of building the Framework team under this this new CEO, I mean, obviously, if you win a contract, you've got to be able to implement it, haven't you?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that was the focus of the those who were employed by Framework, you know, supporting and assisting our clients to fulfill the needs of their employment.
Right. I mean, did you see quite a dramatic growth in the organisation in those? I guess we're talking, I thought 1984 was the sort of founding date of Framework.
Yes. That's when, I think that's the date when the building, I think it was 83 that the building was opened. But as I mentioned about John Tomsett's involvement in those early days, it has grown, it's taken forward, and Chris Harris became the CEO for a number of years, and then Helmer van der Lans, and then
Colin Hayes. Yes, oh, well, so there's quite a lot of history there.
There is.
And you, Murray, personally, you've had 34 years on or off. It's you had a little break, I think, but you couldn't get out of it, and they hijacked you again and got you back into it.
Yes, there's an element of that, Sheldon. Obviously, I did it willingly, and I think it also indicates, you know, how I felt about the organisation. It was pretty special to me to having been in from the beginning, to be invited to rejoin the board, and it was about the time that Framework was looking to merge with Richmond Fellowship, a Christchurch-based mental health provider. And it's interesting that that merger did not go ahead. And part of the reason was that there were several layers of structure in the Richmond organization, whereas Framework, there was a close, a much more restricted structure whereby the senior management team, the supervisors, and then the clients, there was a short communication chain between those.
I was around, I was working for Framework at the time of the merger. I'm not sure whether merger was quite the correct term, since Richmond was about three times bigger than us, but I think there was a very controversial CEO of Richmond who at that time as well, who may have created a few barriers in a successful merger. I'm not sure, but that was sort of what was being rumoured.
You're absolutely right, Sheldon, that was the case, and I guess that's the reason it didn't proceed.
Right. Well, let's take another music break then. Thank you, Murray, for that contribution. And what have we got, Declan?
Oh, I've picked out another favourite for you. I decided I'd be nice to you today. No, mind you, I always am. This song was a hit during the hippie culture. Its first release it was the first release this guy did as a solo artist. And, of course, the song is Brown Eyed Girl from Van Morrison. You're with Take It From Us, 104.6 Planet FM. And we broadcast here Tuesdays, 12:30 to 1:30.
when the rains came. Down in the hollow, playing a new game. Laughing and a running, hey, hey. Skipping and a jumping. In the misty morning fog with all our hearts a thumping. And you, a brown eyed girl. You, my brown-eyed girl. And whatever happened to Tuesday and so slow? Gone down the old man with a transistor radio. Standing in the sunlight laughing, hiding behind a rainbow's wall. Slipping and sliding all along the waterfall with you, a brown-eyed girl. And you, my brown-eyed girl, do you remember when we used to sing sha-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la
la la di da, la di da. You have grown. Cast my memory back there a lot. Sometimes I'm overcome thinking about it. Making love in the green grass behind the stadium with you. My brown eyed girl. And you, my brown eyed girl. Do you remember when we used to sing?
You're with Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM. Take It From Us Community Notice Board.
And Pathways are looking for a team coach for a new peer acute alternative service in Christchurch. Somebody with demonstrated ability to inspire and lead a team. I believe this is quite an exciting development in Christchurch, this acute alternative service for peers, and I imagine run by peers. It does say that the role will be pivotal in the establishment of the new service and its relationships, the people we support, it's relationships to the people we support, their families, whānau, their communities, and their clinical team at the Canterbury DHB. Applications close on Sunday, the 7th of October. You can check it out with the WISE Group. That's wisegroup.co.nz/uploads. So that's the team coach for this new peer acute alternative service in Christchurch.
And I've got one here, a free eating disorder recovery support group presented by Fighting the Mind. It's at their Hobsonville headquarters, Bell Room, 214 Buckley Avenue in Hobsonville. It's on Wednesday, October the 24th from 6:45 to 8:45, and it offers a safe and confidential environment for whānau and families caring for and those with eating disorders. And I remember we had a guest on a few weeks ago.
Who Laura and Tori, who have set up Fighting the Mind, and Laura is now 18, had a real scare in Starship Hospital from her anorexia, and so they are very active on Facebook. You can check them out on Fighting the Mind on Facebook.
I think too, it says in here, a space to share your experiences and to receive support, so it's a good networking opportunity too.
Also, there's a certified peer support group that they're trying to set up. It's going to be this Thursday, September the 27th. The time is 6 o'clock, and it's at Recovery International's premises, Level 3 Westfield Mall, Manukau City. The whole idea of this is to get peer support and others together to share ideas and thoughts. And I know that there's certainly some issues around employment, opportunities for peer support people who have done the training. So get along to that this Thursday, September the 27th. Time is 6 o'clock, Level 3 Westfield Mall in Manukau City.
And anybody who has some past connection with Teata out west would be more than welcome to come along any time on October the 10th from 10 a.m. to join them in the 20th anniversary celebrations. He's saying it'd be great if Sheldon or me, whoever's reading the notice, I'm on the shore, of course, so I had to do a bit of pleading on that one. People are also welcome to contact Sue or Z-E at Teata for more information, and their number is obviously area code 09 837 0671. That's 837 0671, and that of course is October the 10th from 10 a.m.
and that's World Mental Health Day. We had Teata, three of the people attached with Teata, and you can hear that interview on www.planetaudio.org.nz/ take it from us. Well, let's go back to Murray Henschel about these pioneering days. And you've done 34 years. You had a bit of a break in the middle there, Murray, but you got hijacked back into the organisation. What were some of your personal highlights?
Yes, I think, Sheldon, as you have alluded to, the 25-year celebration with Helen Clark as our guest, and if you recall, Kingsland is her, or was her, electorate.
Mount Albert electorate, yes.
Yes, yeah. And she was gracious in being our guest that evening, and it was a wonderful, wonderful occasion. And that stands out in my mind as a huge achievement for the organisation. I think from a different perspective, the strength of our financial base is something that we as a trust are very proud of. The from those very early days that I mentioned before, we have a strong financial base now, a strong balance sheet, and onward and upward, as I say.
Well, you've also seen the development of separation of the trust and the operating company called Framework Services.
Yes, exactly. And the trust, I use the expression that it represents our treasure chest. We were fortunate in realising the properties that we had been operating from in Kingsland, the bases for our services were more one-on-one out in the community, and the need for premises lessened. That enabled us to sell to great advantage the totality of the Kingsland sites. As I say, this treasure chest will enable us to be potentially less dependent upon the government in terms of funding, and to enable some experimentation in the provision of services to the mentally unwell. But this hasn't happened yet, but I see this as being the next phase of Framework's growth and development.
Well, yes. Interestingly enough, there is the challenge of appointing a new CEO to create the vision again.
That's
and
right.
The direction in order to capitalise on that treasure what did you call it?
Treasure chest.
Treasure chest, yes, and to provide direction as to which way framework might move. So
yes.
There's quite a parallel between what we've been talking about in these pioneering days and appointing that first CEO and the need to probably recruit somebody that's got those skills and the passion and the vision.
Yes, absolutely, and I guess that's a reflection of the growth that we've experienced and the support that we've had from the community to provide the services that we have.
Right. And, of course, there's been a shift out to Otahuhu and a move into premises which are owned by Framework Trust as well. So
yes.
That's part of the treasure chest that you refer to.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Murray. I've got a little thing from Facebook. I'm getting all sorts of gems from Facebook, and this one is a thought for today. And then it happened. One day you wake up and you're in this place. You're in this place where everything feels right. Your heart is calm. Your soul is lit. Your thoughts are positive. Your vision is clear. You're at peace. At peace with where you've been. At peace with what you've been through. And at peace with where you're headed. So if you like, relate that to Framework as well.
And to my exiting the organisation, yes, indeed.
Yeah. Well, that's a very big deal, really, Murray, isn't
right.
it? 34 years. Do you think there's going to be a bit of a wrench?
I'm sure it will. I'm assured that people will keep me abreast of developments, and there are two trustees from Devonport that I will have regular contact with. So I'm sure I'm going to keep in touch. And
coffee at the Esplanade Hotel and chew over the affairs of Framework.
Absolutely.
Very good. Okay,
yeah, us. I was just going to say, if anyone's going through a hard time with all what we go through, there's a little saying that says, this too shall end. And I think when we look at what we come through in our lives, it's quite amazing how that happens. It's good night from me, and it's good night from him, I guess. We're out of here. See you next week.